Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we are pulling from a really fascinating stack of sources for you.
Yeah, ranging from some pretty dense foundational calculus textbooks all the way up to, you know, modern cutting-edge statistical machine learning papers.
Right. And our mission today is to demystify one of the most honestly intimidating symbols in math.
Oh, the tall stretched out S shape.
Exactly, the integral. We are going to unpack how it is, at its core, like the exact same concept as basic addition.
Which is wild when you really think about it.
It is. And most importantly, we're going to reveal why understanding this concept is your absolute shortcut to grasping how modern AI models handle, you know, uncertainty, probability, and these massively complex predictions.
It really is the engine under the hood.
Okay, let's unpack this.
So to really get inside the mechanics of these models, we kind of have to start with how they measure the world, right?
Right.
And that actually brings us to two fundamentally different philosophies of mathematics.
Okay, so think about the dashboard of your car. When you look right past the steering wheel, you see two completely different mathematical stories happening at the same time.
I love this analogy.
Right. So on one hand, you have the speedometer. The needle is pointing to, say, 60 miles per hour. That is a snapshot of the immediate present.
Yeah, it's your exact rate of change at this very second.
Exactly.
And in the language of calculus, that speedometer represents the derivative. It's the mathematics of the instant, right? The immediate slope of the curve.
It's all about action, optimization.
Right. But right below that bouncing needle is the odometer.
Mm-hmm.
It says, you know, 50,000 miles. And that dial, it doesn't care about what you're doing right this second.
It only cares about history.
Exactly. It is the silent, ongoing tally of every single mile you've ever driven since the car rolled off the factory floor.
It is the mathematics of accumulation.
Yes. And that accumulation is the perfect visual for the exact opposite of the derivative. It's the integral.
So if the derivative is moving from, like, total accumulation to a momentary rate of change,
then the integral is moving from a rate of change back to total accumulation.
Right. Okay.
In a formal geometric sense, imagine a curve on a graph, right? We can call it me-axis. The definite integral of that curve from point of baller to point of ballers is defined as the exact area between the curve itself and the horizontal six-axis.
And if the curve dips below the six-axis, we just count that as negative area. Really.
Exactly. Positive area above, negative below.
But, I mean, calculating the area of a square is easy. You just multiply length by width. But curves are messy. They swoop and dive.
Yeah, you can't just use a single multiplication operation to find the space underneath a swoop.
Right, which is why mathematicians historically developed Riemann sums.
Yes, the classic Riemann sums.
The logic goes like this. If you can't measure the area of a continuous swooping curve, you just approximate it with shapes you can measure.
Right, like rectangles.
Exactly. You slice that total area under the curve into a series of vertical rectangles. Let's say you divide the space between point Laurier and point Laurier into a number of subintervals.
Mm-hmm.
Each rectangle has this tiny width called delta sections, and the height of each rectangle is simply the value of the function at that specific spot.
Right, the phi value.
Right. So you calculate the area of all those individual vertical rectangles, you add them all up, and you get a rough estimate of the total area. And if you make the rectangles infinitesimally thin, that delta 6 it all becomes 6.
Yep, the 6 you see at the end of the integral.
But wait, hold on. If we're telling a neural network to calculate an area using infinite rectangles, wouldn't that, like, instantly melt the GPU?
Oh, totally.
I mean, there has to be a computational shortcut. Drawing infinitely thin rectangles just to find an area sounds like a theoretical nightmare. It's not a practical engineering solution.
Well, what's fascinating here is that you're hitting on the exact realization that mathematicians had centuries ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The whole limits and infinite rectangles concept, that is just the formal definition of the integral.
Okay.
It's the rigorous geometric proof of what we are trying to achieve. But we rarely calculate it that way in practice.
Thank goodness.
Right. That rigorous definition simply sets the stage for what is arguably the greatest, most elegant shortcut in the history of mathematics.
Right, because to bypass the impossible task of calculating infinite rectangles, we introduce a mathematical trick. A trick that solves the area problem by simply running derivatives in reverse.
The ultimate math cheat code.
The antiderivative.
Exactly. Think about the basic power rule in calculus. If you take the derivative of 6 squared, the rule says you bring the exponent down and subtract 1 from it.
So it becomes two ballers dollars.
Right. To find the antiderivative, you just do the exact opposite. If you start with 2 balls dollar, you add 1 to the exponent and divide by that new number.
So the integral of 60 dollar to the power of nadar becomes 6 dollar to the dollar plus 1 divided by dollar plus 1.
Yeah, the 2 dollar turns right back into 6 squared. It perfectly undoes it.
And our sources give us a few of these key reversing rules for you to remember. Like the integral of 2 with a $6, incredibly, just to the $6.
Always a fun one.
Yeah. And the integral of 1 over $6 at the natural log of $6. The integral of cosine is sitring.
It's basically just learning the backward steps of the dance.
Right. But whenever you see these rules written out, there is always this extra piece at the end. It always says e to the $6 plus $6, or 6 squared plus $6. So what does this all actually mean? Why do we always add this mysterious constant of integration to the end of our equations?
Well, think about the nature of a constant number. Differentiation, the process of finding a rate of change, it actually destroys constant terms.
Because they don't change.
Exactly. If you have a flat number, like 5 or 10 or a million times, a flat number has zero rate of change. It's totally static. Its derivative is zero.
Okay.
So when we run the process in reverse, when we integrate to find the antiderivative, we kind of have a blind spot.
Oh, I see. Because if the rate of change was 2 balers, the original function could have been 6 squared plus 5.
Or 6 squared plus 100.
Huh.
Or 6 squared minus 42.
Right. Because all of those would have a derivative of 2 balers. The constant number just gets wiped out.
Precisely. We add the plus $2 as a placeholder to acknowledge that starting baseline value.
So to bring it back to the car analogy, the odometer tells you that you drove 50 miles today.
Mm-hmm.
But unless you know the constant plus $2, like the exact mileage the car had when you started the engine this morning, you don't know the absolute total mileage of the car.
That is exactly it.
Yeah.
And this realization leads us directly to the fundamental theorem of calculus.
The big one.
The big one. This theorem states that the definite integral of a function from point at dollars to point dollars is simply the antiderivative evaluated at dollars minus the antiderivative evaluated at a dollar.
So you just find the antiderivative, plug in your endpoints, and subtract.
Yep. No infinite rectangles required.
So if you want to find the area under the line equals 2 to positive, say between 6 equals 1 and 6 equals 3.
You just take the antiderivative, which is $6 squared, and evaluate it at those limits.
So 3 squared is 9, 1 squared is 1, 9 minus 1 is 8. The area is exactly 8.
And what's beautiful is that we can prove this works with basic geometry.
Right, because if you graph the line, nigh equals $2 between 1 and 3, it forms a trapezoid.
Exactly. The vertices are at 1, 0, 3, 0, 1, 2, and 3, 6.
And if you use the standard middle school geometry formula for the area of a trapezoid, you get exactly 8. The exact same result as the calculus equation.
The continuous mathematics perfectly matches the rigid geometry.
It's so satisfying. But calculating physical area is just a geometry trick. The real power of the integral unlocks when we change the rules.
Right.
When we declare that the maximum possible area under a curve is exactly 1, representing 100% certainty.
Because suddenly we aren't measuring physical space anymore. We are measuring probability. In machine learning, a probability density function, or PDF, describes the likelihood of a continuous random variable taking on different values.
Okay.
And the golden rule here is that the total probability of all possible outcomes must add up to 100%.
Right. Something has to happen.
Exactly. Mathematically, the integral of the PDF from negative infinity to positive infinity must equal exactly 1.
So when an AI model needs to know the probability of an event falling between, say, value $8 and value dollars, it just integrates the density function between those two limits.
Yes.
So if a real estate AI is predicting house prices, it doesn't just guess a single flat number. It outputs a continuous curve of all possible prices.
Right.
And to find the chance that a house falls between $300,000 and $400,000, it just calculates the area under the curve between those two points.
Exactly. Now, consider the concept of expected value in this context.
Okay.
In discrete math, finding an average means multiplying each possible outcome by its probability and summing them up. But in continuous math, like that spectrum of housing prices, you have infinitely many possible values. So the expected value formula becomes an integral.
The integral of $6 multiplied by the probability function 5 another's.
Precisely.
And here's where it gets really interesting for you listening. The discrete sum symbol, that jagged Greek letter sigma, and the continuous integral symbol, the tall stretched out S, they are doing the exact same job.
Yes, they really are.
They are both summing up quantities weighted by their probability. The only difference is the domain. Sigma is for discrete, choppy data points, and the integral is for smooth, continuous data curves.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it really changes how you view all the probabilistic mechanisms in machine learning.
It changes everything.
They are all integrals at their core. Let's look at entropy, which measures the uncertainty or like the chaos in a model's predictions.
Okay, let's look at that.
The formula for the entropy of a continuous distribution is the negative integral of the probability function multiplied by the natural log of that probability function.
Okay, wait, let's actually break down why that formula works mechanically. Why are we integrating a natural log?
Well, probabilities are fractions, right? Numbers between 0 and 1.
Right.
And the natural logarithm of a fraction is always a negative number. Because we want entropy to be a positive measure of uncertainty, we slap a negative sign in front of the integral to flip it.
That makes sense.
But the real magic is the px dollar log of px dollar part.
Mm-hmm.
You can think of the natural log of px dollar as the surprise of an event.
Surprise.
Yeah. Rare events have high surprise. Common events have low surprise. By multiplying it by px and integrating, you're essentially calculating the expected value of surprise across the entire continuous distribution.
Oh, wow. So a highly predictable AI model, one that is very confident in a really narrow range of answers that would have a sharp spike on its graph.
Exactly.
And most of the area under the curve has very low surprise, so the overall entropy integral is just a really small number.
Yep. But a totally confused AI model where every single answer is equally likely.
It would have a flat, uniform curve.
Right, which maximizes that integral and shows really high entropy.
That's brilliant. And we see the same mechanism in KL divergence, right?
Right.
Which is how we physically train models to understand how wrong they are.
Exactly. KL divergence measures the difference between two probability distributions. Say, the AI's predicted distribution versus the true real-world distribution, PIA.
Okay.
It calculates this by integrating the true distribution multiplied by the natural log of the ratio between the two distributions.
So it's literally comparing the shapes of two curves.
Yes.
If the AI's prediction perfectly matches reality, the ratio between the curves is 1 everywhere.
Right. And the natural log of 1 is 0.
Which zeros out the entire integral.
Exactly. The AI knows its prediction perfectly matches reality because the accumulated error area is 0. The AI's entire goal during training is to minimize this integral.
So the fundamental language of uncertainty, prediction, and error in AI is entirely written in the grammar of integration.
It really is.
But, okay, we have to crash back to computational reality for a second here.
Oh.
We've established that ML relies heavily on continuous probability integrals to understand loss and entropy. But if you have an AI model processing millions of parameters, say, a massive neural network digesting really high-dimensional data, performing perfect closed-form calculus on that is practically impossible.
Yeah, it's not happening.
So how do frameworks like PyTorch and TensorFlow actually survive this?
Well, when the math gets too complex for exact analytical solutions, PyTorch and TensorFlow rely on numerical integration.
Okay.
But the problem with traditional numerical integration, like those Riemann sums with the tiny rectangles we talked about earlier, is what we call the curse of dimensionality.
Right. Because if you have a one-dimensional curve, maybe you chop it into 100 rectangles.
Sure.
If it's a two-dimensional surface, 100 by 100 grid means 10,000 little boxes.
And by the time you get to a 1,000-dimensional neural network, the number of grid points you need to calculate is larger than the number of atoms in the universe.
The rigid grid approach completely collapses.
It totally collapses.
Yeah.
So to survive high-dimensional space, modern frameworks use Monte Carlo integration.
Okay, Monte Carlo.
Yeah. Instead of perfectly solving the integral using the fundamental theorem or building an impossible grid, Monte Carlo estimates the integral by taking the average of the function's values at randomly sampled points.
Okay, imagine we have a wildly shaped, custom-built swimming pool. And we want to know exactly how much water is falling into it during a rainstorm.
I like where this is going.
The pure calculus way would be to perfectly map the geometric curve of the entire pool's perimeter and integrate the rainfall over that exact continuous area.
Which is incredibly hard.
Right. And the Riemann sum way would be placing millions of tiny, perfectly aligned square cups across the entire surface.
Also incredibly hard.
Exactly. Instead, Monte Carlo integration is like just throwing 1,000 buckets randomly into the pool area.
Bro.
We measure how much water falls into just those random buckets, average them out, and use that to estimate the total water in the pool.
That is a perfect analogy. By converting a complex continuous integral into a discrete sample average, Monte Carlo methods bypass the curse of dimensionality entirely.
Wow.
The error of the estimation drops based on how many random samples you take, entirely independent of how many dimensions the problem actually has.
So that good enough estimation is exactly what makes modern probabilistic machine learning tractable.
Exactly. It's a pragmatic engineering solution to an otherwise impossible math problem.
That's wild. But, you know, I want to tie this all together by returning to the core relationship between the two halves of calculus.
Let's do it.
We established earlier that derivatives and integrals are opposites.
Mm-hmm.
And the fundamental theorem actually has a second part that makes this explicit. It states that if you take the derivative of an accumulated area function, an integral, you just recover the original function.
Right. The derivative of the integral of simply 5 eccentric.
They completely undo each other, precisely like multiplication and division.
And this duality is exactly why both operations are indispensable in machine learning. But they're used for entirely different jobs.
How so?
Think about how a model learns. Gradient descent, which relies entirely on differentiation, is the navigator.
Okay.
It calculates immediate rates of change to find the quickest path down the loss surface to reduce errors. It's the speedometer guiding the car, adjusting weights based on instant feedback.
Right.
But integration is what describes the probability densities and the entropy. It maps the landscape of uncertainty itself.
Okay, let's summarize the journey we just took. We started with the sheer geometric headache of measuring area with infinitely thin rectangles.
The Riemann sums.
Right. Then we explored the magic shortcut, the antiderivative, and the fundamental theorem of calculus, which lets us bypass the rectangles entirely by just running derivatives in reverse.
Okay.
We saw how this concept of measuring accumulated area is exactly what we use to measure accumulated probability in continuous AI models, defining concepts like expected value and KL divergence. And finally, we saw that when things get too wildly complex in high dimensions, tools like PyTorch use Monte Carlo estimation, throwing random buckets into the pool to bypass the curse of dimensionality.
This raises an important question, though.
What?
Something I think really sits at the philosophical heart of modern AI development.
Okay, lead on me.
We just explored how derivatives and integrals are perfect mathematical opposites.
Right.
Yet, when we build an AI, we treat them very differently. We use exact, rigorously calculated derivatives for gradient descent to train the model's weights.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to measuring the AI's uncertainty, calculating those massive probability integrals, we almost always have to settle for random approximations like Monte Carlo.
So one half of the model's brain is mathematically precise, while the other half relies on statistical sampling to guess its own confidence.
Exactly. If the learning mechanism of the AI is perfectly exact, but the mechanism that measures its own uncertainty is inherently an approximation, what does that mean for our ability to ever have truly mathematically perfect confidence in an AI's decisions?
Wow.
We are building highly optimized systems whose self-awareness of probability is, by definition, in estimation.
It's a fascinating mathematical irony, honestly. You have the exact needle of the speedometer pushing the model forward with incredible precision, but the odometer mapping out its overarching probabilistic reality is just like throwing random buckets out the window to estimate the landscape.
That's a way to put it.
So, to you listening right now, the next time you hear someone talking about AI navigating complex probabilities, remember the math running quietly underneath it all.
Yes.
Remember the infinite rectangles, the magic undo button of the antiderivative, and how those concepts actually map the entropy of our most advanced models. Keep questioning how these models know what they claim to know, and keep exploring the math that makes it all possible. Thanks for diving deep with us. We'll catch you on the next one.